Welcome back to a special edition of Eagle Talk as we are honoring the 1989 NCAA National Championship men's basketball team here at North Carolina Central. That'll happen this Saturday at halftime of the contest between North Carolina Central and Delaware State. For those that don't know, the former head coach of that 89 team is now the director of operations for Delaware State, as the former head coach after Michael Bernard, Greg Jackson, is the head coach at Delaware State, so we're kind of making it easier for them to come to the Bull City and honor them then. So going to be a fun week. We're looking back at 25 years after a huge weekend here at NCCU. And joining us here on Eagle Talk, one of the top play-by-play broadcasters in the country. You'll see him come March Madness. Hopefully even maybe he'll be calling a game that NCCU's playing this year in the NCAA tournament. Tim Brando, also the host of the Tim Brando Show, a nationally syndicated radio show across SiriusXM and radio stations across the country. Tim, first of all, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on Eagle Talk. Thanks for joining us here on today's show.
Well, my pleasure, and brings back a lot of memories, and my many thanks to you for sending me the clips of the 89 championship to sort of jog my memory. I like to think that I can remember all the games, or at least something about all the games that I've called in the past, especially championship games, Chris. But the facts are, 25 years is a ways back, and sometimes we definitely need a little video support to jog that memory. And, you forget sometimes the people you've touched and the number of events you've had, but it's always great to play a role in bringing some sense of joy to those that are, maybe past their prime and like to remember themselves when they were at their athletic best. And I'm sure that's the case for the players at North Carolina Central that are being honored today.
When you look back at that ball game, when I showed you those clips, what do you remember? What came to your mind first?
Well, I think first and foremost, and this is something else that you need to be made aware of, in recent years, CBS has been doing the Division II National Championship. And in fact, last year, the game was played at the site of the Final Four. It was played at Phillips Arena before a pretty packed house, and Metro State had a big lead and lost to Drury University, which is also out of the state of Missouri. It is the alma mater of Bob Barker of Price is Right fame, and it was a game that I called and had a blast calling with my friend who's been with me for many of these Division II championships, who also does a lot of ACC games, Dan Bonner. Dan and I have done probably, I'd say, the last 8 or 9 Division II national championships since it moved to CBS, and those games mean so much to those kids and so much to the universities. And now, because Division I and especially the bigger conferences like the ACC, which you identify with in your part of the world, and the Big Ten, the SEC, the Big East, and the American Conference, and all of the others, the Big 12 and Pac-12 and so on, virtually every game is televised. And that wasn't the case in 1989. And it's not the case now for Division II. So really, when the teams make it to the Elite Eight, and even to the semifinals that may be televised on CBS Sports Network now, the cable entity which CBS has, just being, having seen cameras gets those kids excited. And it's a little bit of a throwback to the way it used to be when television trucks would be rolling into any campus for football or basketball in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. and maybe even the early 90s. So there's a excitement level that comes from the players and from the schools, their staffs, and their administrations whenever we're there. We don't really get that because D1 has really been spoiled by all of the attention that they've been given, with virtually every game being televised. So the excitement level is the thing that jumps out at me. When you would meet with coaches and players at that level, they were so enthused, so happy to see you. And I was genuinely enthused and excited to be there and wanted to talk to them. But that's the thing that jumps, that the first memory I have is that, how pumped up they would be. But because we haven't seen any of their games and we're trying to make it sound as though we have, We're trying to do as much homework on each player as we can, nicknames and all of the things that we can find out, what the nuances are, what the signature of the coach is. In the case of Coach Bernard, he did think of his team as sort of the Georgetown of the Division II category, that they were a suffocating defense and that they would force you to defend on the other side of the ball. And if they ever got a lead on you, you were going to have a really hard time coming back on them because they protected the ball. They would turn you over, but never turn it over. And in both games that they played, the semifinal win, which I believe was a 20-point blowout, and then came the big blowout in the championship game, they got out to early leads because of their ability to turn over the opposition, and they were very athletic inside. And they had a number of players that could score. Once they got a lead, you're going to have a really hard time trying to make a comeback against them. And that's what sort of jumps out at me, that my first memories of that matchup upon getting the information from you.
Chris Hooks, play-by-play voice of the NCCU Sports Network with Tim Brando, who called the 1989 National Championship game. And, Tim, when you look back and see the players, you look at the Miles Clarks, the Antoine Sifford, it really seemed like both you and Mike Rice were pretty surprised at what you saw with Sifford's performance in that National Championship game.
Well, he was certainly the yin to Miles Clark's yang. Clark had been sick and had been a little banged up, tweaked a little bit going into the championship, and frankly needed a little bit of help. And Sifford gave it to him. And the other guy that I think he only averaged something like 5 points a game, Dominic Stevens, was just lights out. I mean, he was very difficult for the opposition to deal with on the inside. As was Adrian McKinnon. You know, I think they called him the gentle giant of the group. They had size and they had athleticism on their side. And while Clark was the leader of the band, he was really getting a lot of help at that time. You know, they were sharing the ball very well. And the thing that jumps out at you when you look at the video, not only were they getting some steals and forcing the tempo with their defense, but they were sharing the ball really well. And those were the things that jumped out at you as you were watching that basketball team play. Jeff Age was another one, a guy that really closed out a lot defensively and was able to help. You know, they had a reputation going in, and if you looked at the stats, and that you're almost, with these types of games as announcers, you really do have to look at the numbers, try to help tell you the story about the team. They were not known as a team that necessarily scored a great deal. They won with defense and possession of the basketball. They, if anything, were known as a team that would take the air out a little bit. But I remember broaching that subject with Coach Bernard, and because of the statistical data, and he sort of lashed out as if to say, "Well, wait, we'll run as long as we get it started with our defense." And they did. They had a lot of breaks, and they had a lot of easy layup opportunities because they were getting turnovers. The points off turnovers in both the semifinals and the finals that year in Springfield Mass were vital for them to win the championship.
And you look back at the stats that ball game, Tim, and I'm looking at the box score. They held a team that's averaged 85 points a game to 46 points, 32.7% shooting. In fact, Southeast Missouri State did not get double-digit field goals in either half. I mean, that just shows you, like you said, the defense that Bernard's squad played.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about that. And I can't recall in my years of doing the Division II National Championship a more authoritative victory. You know, those games, by and large, are always nail-biters. This game, by and large, was over at halftime. In fact, the last sequence before the end of the half was just devastating for Southeast Missouri, and I thought it was a real telling point. Down 18, they give up a fast break point inside, and then on the inbounds pass, a quick steal, another hoop just before the intermission. And, you know, the look on the players and even the coach for Southeast Missouri State sort of told you that this thing was, you know, there may be 20 more minutes to play, but this was going to be a coronation for North Carolina Central. And that was the other thing, and maybe it goes back to the way the program had been run under Coach Bernard, but the thing that, you know, a lot of times when you've got that big of a lead, it's easy to get a little careless and make some mistakes, not share the ball maybe the way you once were. Get a little lackadaisical, but that did not happen at all. They showed no signs of fatigue, nor did they take their foot off the pedal. They continued to play very hard, and it was as if they were very businesslike in their approach. And that was something that I know he was quite proud of at the end of the game, because they weren't known for having a lot of stars, but they were known for their toughness, and they displayed that in the second half of the game.
Do you recall, in a lot of the storylines coming in to the tournament were, into the Elite Eight, where, you know, there was a local paper that called North Carolina Central the Slowpoke Eagles. Do you feel like then that North Carolina Central had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder from that, but they fell short the year before, losing to Troy State in the regional finals, so it seemed like they were out to prove themselves?
Yeah, well, Coach Bernard clearly had a chip on his shoulder about it, and was very you could tell, and he probably still can when you meet him. He's a charismatic guy and a competitive guy, and he wasted no time in letting Mike Rice and myself know that some of this stuff that was being written was not at all his own perception of his team. And again, that goes back to, again, the relative lack of awareness that sometimes people in the media that are covering an event that haven't seen these teams play all year but are trying to grasp what the teams are about through strictly looking at the statistical data. You know, sometimes the numbers in and of themselves are just that, they're numbers. You can't let them indicate to you what you think. And that's one of the reasons why when it comes to the D2 championship, I always like to get there to see the semifinals. And in past years recently, Dan Bonner and I have gotten in there in time to see the quarterfinals. Sometimes the quarterfinal round is even better. But you need to see the team with your own eyes before you can determine what really the makeup and the structure of a basketball team is. If you're just going to, you know, get a stat sheet out and then take a look at your boards and get some anecdotal material out on a team and think that you're prepared, really prepared to call a game for a club and be fair to them, you're really wrong. You've got to see that team with your own eyes. And depending upon who they play, you might see a completely different caliber of squad. In both cases, as I remember from that looking at the tape that you sent me, I remember it, and this did jog my memory. They played exactly the same way in the semifinals against a team that again, had been pretty efficient offensively, and they shut them down. But we were expecting a very close game that night. It was anything but.
Yeah, and it really seemed like, in watching the whole video of the game, you guys seemed to be a little thrown back a little bit about how dominant North Carolina Central was, and it really, not saying it affected the broadcast, I think you guys did a tremendous job, but I think you guys are like, wow, I don't think you guys expected, again, like you said, I don't think it was that it would be this big of a victory for North Carolina Central, but you looking at the tape again, you look like Bernard's squad, this was just par for the course for them.
Were very businesslike in their approach. Even at the moments when you saw, and a lot of times you see this, a team knows with 4 or 5 minutes left in the game that it's theirs. The actions along the sidelines, I mean, until the very last minute or so when there were some stoppages in plays, only then did you see, reactions like, hey, this is ours, almost the celebration beginning. They tempered themselves quite well during that time. And, when you're a great defensive team, and they were the top-ranked defensive team in the country, I think that there's a swagger that comes with that, that they know that even if their offense isn't what it needs to be in a given night, their defense will have their back. Well, in these two games, and especially the championship game, their offense was really good. And if their offense was clicking, no one was going to stop them. And I think that was one of the reasons why they were a supremely confident basketball team.
Chris Hooks, play-by-play voice of the NCCU Sports Network, with Tim Brando, who called the 1989 National Championship game. You'll see him on CBS. He's the host of the Tim Brando Show. It's a nationwide radio show. Tim, first of all, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us today. But I got one more question for you. You know, since you do still call the Division II National Championships, I've got a two-part question for you. What is your favorite national championship game? It doesn't have to be the one with North Carolina Central. This is sort of getting a chance for fans to get to know you a little bit. What's your favorite D2 national championship game? And then what's your favorite Division I game that you've ever called? It can be NCAA tournament-wise as well.
Okay, there's a lot of them. The Division I is really tough. But I'll, as much as I know you're a fan of Mike Jaminski and myself, by the way, we're together this Wednesday night doing an NC State game at Wake Forest for the ACC Network. So
okay.
We'll be together then for those of you in the Durham area. The national championship game last year was very, very exciting. Metro State had a big lead. Drury came back and was able to pull it out. It was an incredible basketball game, but they're probably, for me anyway, was a game in Division I during the Sweet 16 back in 1998 that I had with the late Al McGuire. We were calling the game together, former great Marquette coach.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the all-timers. I'm proud to say that in my career, I not only worked with Billy Packer and Dick Vitale, but I also worked with Al McGuire. He was the real deal. I mean, what you saw was who he was.
He was a good one.
And Stanford and Rhode Island were playing in the regional finals in St. Louis that year.
That's right.
Rhode Island had a 6-point lead with 50 seconds left, and Stanford came back to win the game.
Yep.
And did so on a stolen inbounds pass by Arthur Lee. And he found a wide-open Mad Dog Madsen, if you remember the name Mark.
Oh,
Madsen.
Yeah, Mark Madsen, yep.
He slammed it in, and the reaction he had was epic. It was one of those, when you see the one-shining moments, it was one of those natural one-shining moments with Madsen with his arms extended going crazy. And getting a chance to call that game and then subsequently watching Al McGuire dancing with Mike Montgomery and Stanford and that... And that stupid tree mascot they got. that was a lot of fun, very impromptu, and a real joy. But you know, there are so many outstanding moments for me every year, it seems, in the second round or the first round. You know, Butler gave me a few years ago. The Butler did it again on two separate occasions.
Yep.
With buzzer beaters. I mean, just incredible games. One against Pittsburgh when we actually saw the lead change hands three times. Mike Jaminski and I had game lead changed hands three times inside of 3.9 seconds. Now, you know, I don't know how that happens, but it happened with 3.9 seconds in D.C. So there are a lot of memorable moments. But also let me say this, as D2 championships go, this isn't the first time I got a call from somebody saying, hey, or run into somebody that said to me, hey, you know, I had a son, or maybe I played in the national championship game in such and such a year at the D2 level, and I still have the VHS of your call. And, you know, whenever I'm in a bad mood or just feel like a little melancholy, I'll pull it out and put it in my... maybe they say now I had it converted to DVD.
Yep.
And I'll stick it in my computer, and all of a sudden it brings a smile to my face. You know, that's sort of what you did with me this week by reaching out. And so I'm feeling a lot better and having a much better day talking to you, Chris, about this North Carolina Central National Championship. Trust me, it's something that not only matters to you and to your school, but it also matters to me that it matters to you.
Well, trust me, you know, I know that our fans are excited about, you know, celebrating this achievement, and, you know, we certainly are glad that you took the time out to talk today. In fact, the NCAA now sells the DVDs of the game, and I will, how about we do this? We'll send you a copy of the game, and then if you feel melancholy and want to look back 25 years, you certainly can.
Yeah, well, you know, I can always hope to have the waistline and the hairline that I had back then. That's right.
Well, Tim, seriously, I can't thank you from the bottom of my heart, man. I appreciate you taking time out to talk to us today, and we wish you the best, much success to your show, to your broadcasting career. As you've paved the way for a lot of people like me who want to get to that level at some point, and I appreciate you talking to me today.
Happy to do it, Chris. And remember, enjoy the journey, and keep the dream alive, because it's wonderful to be fortunate enough to get to do what you love and be paid for it. And I know you appreciate that.